the list.
Episode number 165 of the Sane Asylum. I'm your host, Giuseppe, and it's going to be a great show tonight. Got two compelling, interesting fellows. First, let me introduce co-host Frederick C. Blackburn, the incomparable Blackbird 9, who just finished a few months back a remarkable seven-year run analyzing the synagogue of Satan and all its debauchery and murderous infiltration of the First World with his Breakfast Club. And now he migrated over to the Mighty Mighty Republic Broadcasting.org. And on Saturday nights, he's doing one of the most popular shows, The Snack Shack. Frederick, welcome. How are you, my brother?
Greetings, good sir. Happy Sunday. Good to be back. Hope you're having a good weekend.
Yeah. It's been pretty good. It's just getting to be hot and humid again. It's crazy. Gee, funny how that always happens in the South, right?
So, in August, go figure. You know, North Kakalaki in, you know, August, it might be hot and muggy, but, you know, it's obviously climate change, right?
Yep. It was funny. When we first moved back to Virginia in 2014, it was one of those rare summers where It was like the Midwest. It was 85 and low humidity. I'm like, I like this Virginia better. But that was an outlier. Every year since, it's been 95, 100, humid, and all that stuff. So, well, it makes you a better, tougher person to live with all that.
Right. Builds character.
It does. And what an honor it is to have one of the regular weekday hosts. You know, we're those goofs on the weekend. But now tonight, we're going to be talking with a regular host, Jeremy from Kentucky, has a compelling show, In Plain Sight. He does four times a week. He's a history major and a student of political science, an Air Force veteran, and 20 years in the Air Force, and now an entrepreneur. And welcome, Jeremy. I was honored to be on your show Monday, and I'm grateful to you to do a home and home with me, and now you're on the Sane Asylum weekend. So how are you, Jeremy? What's on your mind these days?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's been a great weekend. A lot of Kentucky rain been falling down.
Oh, well, that's good, right?
We need it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Speaking of rain, the opposite of rain is fire in Oriental medicine theory, yin-yang. Yin is water, yang is energy or fire. If you could, Producer Sam, line up clip number 14, I don't know what to make of this Lahaina Island in Maui. It looks so weird. It looks like similar to 9/11 and some of these other weird fires that people, investigators, I'm not going to say conspiracy theorists anymore because it all seems to come true. We'll call them conspiracy analysts. And I saw a really stunning video of looked like some type of beam from somebody filmed it on a cell phone. Purportedly, again, we don't know, because if you've ever watched a modern sci-fi show like Star Trek on Paramount Plus, they make that stuff look so real. So who knows what we're seeing, if anything's real anymore, right? But this woman is a survivor of this clip, and she's got a strong opinion that she says it was a directed energy weapon. So we'll start with clip 14. Go ahead, Sam.
I have been trapped in Lahaina for the last 4 days. And I experienced firsthand what was going on there. What I went through is not important. I need to get this message out. This was not a natural disaster. This was a direct energy attack on the people and the place of Maui. If you know what lives there, what descendants live there, you know why. And you know why it happened on 8/8. And if this is not something that you believe, it's time to stop being a sheep. They came in and they took control. There were trees standing and the buildings gone. This system, this weather system, came in from the mountains, from the east. That does not happen. They were not telling people anything. They were not letting people in to help. And they were letting people go in to get burned alive. There were people burning alive in the streets. There were people dead in the water. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of people that died. What they're telling you in the news is not true, and I lived it firsthand. I sat with the people. This is not to bring fear, this is to educate, because there is darkness that is being hidden. And soon people are going to see. I know now why Gaia sent me there. And I am going to use this platform. There was no warning. There was no nothing. Please boost this post. I want everybody to see this. Don't give a fuck about me. I want everybody to see this.
Well, fellas, let's start with Frederick, then Jeremy. I mean, you never know what to believe anymore, but I'm seeing other videos of very odd things, like this burning circle and the fire jumping and devastating some things and destroying a car completely, and then 15 feet next to it is a car untouched. A lot of peculiarities so reminiscent of 9/11 in New York City. So, Frederick, your thoughts?
I think we should change the term to conspiracy experts, personally, because we just kind of keep nailing it. And I just shout out to Mr. Jeremy. It's an honor to be here with you this evening. Big fan of your show during the week. And yeah, we're the weekend guys. But yeah, one of the things, going back to North Kakalaki weather, you know, this old man has seen many hurricanes up close and personal here in North Kakalaki. And the couple of things that just really stand out is, one, fear-mongering Weather Channel didn't, you know, follow this tropical depression to tropical storm to hurricane for weeks to build up the fear porn around the hurricane that supposedly hit Hawaii, right? So it was just like, what do you mean a hurricane is hitting Hawaii? And then, yeah, the other thing that just really struck me was, you know, when you have hurricanes, it's, you know, high winds and lots of rain. Those are the two factors of you rate that hurricane of how bad it is, how much rain fell, and what were the winds. And so this idea of, you know, those outer bands start drenching everything long before any high winds start happening. The high winds start as you get to that vortex, you know, at the eye of the hurricane where the Bernoulli effect's going on, right? So this idea of, you know, oh, it was, you know, an inferno because of, you know, everything was so dry from the drought. And I'm just like, you know, this is some intense fire. And it reminded me more of the descriptions of Hellstorm, of, you know, what happened in Dresden, Germany, and Hamburg, right, more than any hurricane story I've ever heard in my life and read about. Right. And so those were just some of the things. And then, like you, I have been just covered up with people sending me videos, yep. you know, to say, make the case of these were, you know, fires started with direct, you know, direct energy weapons, masers, lasers, whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. you know, that technology. And, you know, so I'm suddenly thinking of, you know, H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds back in 1898. Right. Yep. Which just happened to be 1 year after the first World Zionist Congress, by the way. What a coinkydink. You know, that War of the Worlds. But, you know, this idea of the heat ray, you know, okay, this, are we at that level of warfare with these people? And then the, I guess, the topper on this is, you know, just so happens a few months ago, the chicken swinger you know, government there in Hawaii, imagine how they, you know, managed to take control of that state as well, but they were having a big meeting talking about World Economic Forum 15-minute controlled cities and how Maui could be a prototype of a complete, you know, island design, right? And so I just go back to, you know, Naomi Wolf's, you know, book, you know, was it about, you know, just that idea of destruction capitalism. You go in, have a war, civil war, whatever, just destroy it, and then you rebuild it. So this is, you know, to me, just that whole Marxist great reset strategy. Like, you know, Saul Alinsky said the first step in community organizing is community disorganizing. That right. every level, you destroy what's there, even if you have to burn it down to the ash. So I guess that's my 2 cents worth.
Oh, excellent insights. Jeremy, your thoughts? Have you looked much into the Lahaina peculiarities?
Not that particular one, but Paul in California sent me an interesting video maybe a few weeks ago. And the video is entitled on YouTube, Looking for Clues in the Canadian Fires. It's a YouTuber, Peggy Hall, the Healthy American, and she was featuring a forensic scientist who had investigated these fires in Canada, and he found and documented his findings with a lot of great photos in this video of like fence posts that were not consumed, wooden fence posts where the nails had burnt holes in the fence posts, where steel belted radial tires had burnt up, but non-steel belted tires had not been touched and the ground under them was not burnt. The same thing they found in various other places where basically metal elements were getting very hot and burning holes in wooden, you know, wooden structures. And I never really thought much about direct energy or anything like that when you're talking about these fires. But this video really made me reconsider, again, looking for clues in the Canadian fires, a very good YouTube video. So the possibility of direct energy causing a lot of these wildfires is not out of the realm, in my opinion.
I completely agree. That's an excellent point. So, you know, Jeremy, I've enjoyed your shows for quite some time, especially when you and the Dr. David Duke protege, Patrick Slattery, get together. You guys do some excellent work. So how did you come to go from the Air Force to becoming a key team of the weekday RBN lineup? Key member of the team.
Well, it started in fall of 2015 when I really was red-pilled the Trump candidacy. And I was started to listen to David Duke because I heard David Duke endorsing Trump. So I started listening to Duke's videos. That led me to Stormfront Radio, where I was a regular caller. And for a while there, Patrick Slattery was a co-host on Stormfront. Right. So I would call in and have a lot of good back and forth with him. And when Patrick got his own show on RBN early 2018, I called into his shows quite often. A lot of shows was just Patrick and I talking, and there were like no other callers. And I said, Patrick, if this keeps up, we're going to have to call this the Patrick and Jeremy Show instead of National Bugle. And so he brought me on as a regular guest co-host once, sometimes twice a week. And we called it the Patrick and Jeremy Show. That's the commercial that runs on RBN a lot. Mm-hmm. Then I contacted John Stattmiller in 2020. And told him that I was interested in filling a slot if he had any open. So he gave me the 9 p.m. Central slot Monday through Friday. That's how I came to have my own show, you know, basically as a regular co-host to Patrick Slattery, mm-hmm. and John heard my work. He was happy with it and brought me on board. So that's how that happened.
Oh, that's excellent. Well, yeah, man. And do you enjoy doing so many shows a week?
It was five nights a week for a couple of years. One of my regular co-hosts on Thursday is William Repellum, mm-hmm. an excellent co-host and an excellent host. He currently hosts National Intel on Wednesdays mm-hmm. on RBN, and then he does the Red Pill Punch Bowl on Fridays. I was wanting to go out and start, you know, kind of having a social life on Friday nights, and that 9 o'clock slot was sort of in the way of that. So I asked William if he would take my Friday night show and create his own show, and that's what happened there. But to answer your question, it is a lot. I paint houses and do various odd jobs for farmers. I do a lot of physical labor. Mm-hmm. I am 47. I'm in great shape, but I'll tell you, at the end of the day, when you get in, it's hard to put together a show, even four nights a week, let alone five. There's a lot of prep that goes into it. There's a lot of listening to content during the day while I'm right. working, and you know, just saving things and putting them on an email draft that I can use later on in the show. It is a lot of hard work. I enjoy it, but it takes a lot out of me. The pinnacle of my week is Wednesday night. I'm a Christian, and Wednesday I try to focus on basically a Bible study. It's called Spiritual Health and Wellness. And instead of preaching to everybody and Bible thumping, you know, through the week, I try to reserve that for Wednesday night, so that if people want to tune in, they can. If they want to tune out, they can do that. And then I give them what I try to do is decent political breakdowns of what's going on in the news those other three nights. So, yeah, it's a lot of work. It's rewarding, though, and I've enjoyed doing it for these last almost 3 years now.
Wow, that's excellent. Yeah, yeah, you're definitely among the best of the weekday people, for sure. I really enjoy listening to your shows. Frederick, any questions for Jeremy before we move on to the next clip?
Oh, just a great background there. I love how everything comes together. And just tip of the hat to you that, you know, putting together that many shows after working a full week. I mean, just, you know, tip of the hat, because I just, you know, putting together one show. It's, oh, my God, where am I going to get the material? But the other thing, you know, about the magnetic stuff, going back to the wildfires, is, you know, with all these metals, you know, think about an MRI and how, you know, exacting they are with you. Don't ever have metal around you when you're having an MRI, because it will become a piece of burning shrapnel being ripped right. from your body, right? And yep. so it's like, you know, is it beyond the realm of possibilities that they're using a microwave, whatever method, you know, weapons, and that is one of the, you know, forensic signs of it. And one of the things Giuseppe and I have talked about is, you know, getting extra scan resolution, you know, the stuff that's getting the infrared or the UV on, these atmospheric conditions, you know, are we seeing something outside the visible spectrum heading, right? So that's just that. And the other thing is just, you know, fascinating, getting back to Jeremy's story, is, you know, working with the farmers. And, you know, I guess the question is, how do you, without triggering people in the community, how do you, you know, find out what they're noticing and, you know, using that in your shows? Because that's one of the things I try to do, is, you know, go out and ask people, you know, what have you seen this week on your radar, right? So how do you, you know, go about that without alienating your neighbors there?
I talk pretty plain to people, and I'm not afraid to talk about the Jewish question with people in my community. You got to be real careful how you approach it. I guess the presentation is everything. But people are receptive. They're receptive to the message, but they don't want to say it themselves. Like, they'll listen to you say it. And in this area in West Kentucky, pretty much between the Kentucky Lake and the Mississippi River, you know, nobody went in really for the COVID nonsense. Sure, businesses shut down and some places required masks, but the people in general just rejected it. They reject anti-white critical race theory. I spoke at a lot of school board meetings here in my area, and the people want this message. They want to hear someone push back. They don't want to do it themselves. That's what I found. There are a lot of Trump tards. There are a lot of people that are trusting the plan, and I would even consider them maybe, you know, buying into Q. And God bless them. You know, it's hard to get them off of that because, you know, people want someone to believe in. They want a strong leader. They want to be led because these people, like, they get up and they go to work every day and they take care of their families. They're good people. They don't have time for politics. They don't want to put the time into it and the investigations. They just want someone to step in and say, I can solve this. And they see Trump as that, even now, even after all of this. That's one of the major obstacles that I've encountered is trying to get them over Trump, trying to get them to see that Trump is not going to bring what we need to make changes, that it's going to be up to us interacting with our school boards, our city councils, our county seats, our local sheriffs, electing great legislatures. That's the key if you're in an area like this to pushing forward, not trusting in Trump.
Oh, well stated. In fact, it's kind of tragic that much of the country is doesn't want to get their hands dirty in as well as the Jewish problem. It's far beyond a question. And they're nervous that it'll blow back on them. But the point is, if you don't take back your country at some point and use the one weapon we all have, which is a massive number a massive number. We have enormous numbers. They don't. And yet you've got all these people who are either it's the spectrum of out and out cowards to I don't want to rock the boat in the middle to, yeah, you're right, but I don't really know what to do. And that was excellent that you're trying to guide them into gaining control of the local school board, the local common council or county government and the local sheriff. That's really the right way to do it. And, you know, it struck me over doing this now for 4 years, coming back to the media, that there's been three massive attacks by, as the great Andrew Carrington the Hitchcock likes to call, the synagogue of Satan, the powers that should not be. And they first tried to create a massive genocide, societal control with the scamdemic and the bubonic Jew jab. But I think now we can all look back and see that was more of a test run. And then they're still trying to goad Putin into a hot World War III, but he's a pretty crafty guy. He hasn't bit yet. And the third one that they're trying, which is just absurd to me, as because Frederick and I are getting a little long in the tooth, and I have lived incredible hot summers back in the 20 years ago. I was, before I went back to school to become a doctor of oriental medicine, I helped a guy start a business in New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Texas. I wrote his business plan and did a lot for him. And we used to go outside at giant car washes and in Texas, and it was 110 every day, all day. And so they're acting like this is something new and boiling temperatures and all this nonsense. But Sam, if you could cue up clip number 13. But this is the one that's failing the most, but I fear that maybe people will go along with it because the goal line to get along ties. But these 15-minute cities is just absurd. And there is a young, incredibly lovely Dutch political commentator named Eva Vlaardingbroek, who I guarantee you is not a tranny. And she exposes this ridiculous climate scam, carbon net zero. And literally, they want it as a form of enslavement. So she's a very bright young woman. Listen to her.
The digital identity is not just a passport that you will have on your iPhone in a digital form. It entails just about everything the government would like to know about you. And yesterday in the Dutch media, we saw a perfect example of what it could entail in the near future. We had the CEO of one of the largest Dutch banks say, why don't we start with a personal carbon credit?
Oh.
A carbon wallet, she called it, actually. Yeah. So right in line with the plans that the World Economic Forum people have for us. And she said it in a way that was particularly funny. She said, well, If everyone gets an individual personal carbon credit, why don't we make it so that rich people who, for example, want to go on holiday a little too often, uh-huh. can buy personal carbon credit from other people who, for example, can't afford buying plane tickets or eating meat too often. So we can that way swap it out.
Oh, so if Bill Gates or Leonardo DiCaprio's carbon footprint is getting a bit too big, then some peasant living in his hovel up country somewhere can sell his, and he can't afford to go to Saint-Tropez, but he'll be able to sell his carbon allowance to Leonardo DiCaprio so Leonardo can park his yacht in Saint-Tropez for a couple of extra days.
Exactly right, that's it. So what will happen is the rich will get richer, the poor will get poorer, and they're saying it openly as if it's not a controversial thing at all. Huh. It's neo-feudalism, that's what it is.
Die uitzoetrechten verdelen en dat elk huishoud of elke
Sam,
burger...
Okay, Sam, you can stop it right there. We don't need the foreign language. But, you know, whenever someone uses Neo or Blackbird 9, it's just a euphemism for Zio, is it not?
Excellent point. I was thinking the same thing. It's like neo-feudalism is the great work. Echo, echo, echo. It's that abracadabra Babylon system of, you know, these are their layers and they're over here in the God layer. And everybody else is slaves, either rewarded slaves or punished slaves. And this is just another way of selling it. This is Edward Bernays' marketing, once again, that they're selling. Because everybody wants to save the planet, right? So, but back to you.
Jeremy, your thoughts on Eva and her insights that it is, yet again, the Build Back Better nonsense, the Jew World Order, the Great Reset nonsense. It's all about... totally eliminating, any kind of fair caste system, economic caste system, and you have just the uber elites living above us all, and the rest of us scrambling for to survive. Your thoughts?
It's very evident in the destruction of the middle and upper working class. It was full bore in 2020 with COVID, with the closures of businesses, while Walmart and Dollar General and all of the other businesses stayed open. They want to build this system where the Jewish-dominated elites are on top. They can be driven around. They can jet around in their private jets. They can eat their meat and drink their expensive wines. And the rest of the populace basically does without and lives in these what they call 15-minute cities.
Right.
And so because this is evident because the average person cannot afford an electric car or the maintenance that's required there. How are they going to charge these electric cars? That's going to be even more detrimental to the environment to charge these cars according to their own belief system. So they don't intend on people having vehicles. They intend on all of us living in some sort of a slave system that's very evident. And the people in this community that I live in, they will not go for that. So the question is, what will the Jewish-dominated elites do? How will they cattle prod these country folk into that system? Will they eliminate them? I don't know. People are going to either go into the system or basically become Luddites. That's the only two options that I can see right now. Perhaps there's a third that I'm not aware of. Back to you guys.
Well, we're coming up to the bottom of the hour break, and after the break, we can address that a little bit. I think there are a third and a fourth option, and one of which is you create your own private member organizations, you create your own way of life with the trustworthy people in your community. But we'll get into that with the great Frederick C. Blackburn and Jeremy from In Plain Sight after these messages. Stay tuned.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you. And your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
God bless your dad. Made a promise if you'll obey him. He said he would wash away all your filth if you would love and never leave him. Hey Jews, your hearts grew fat. You forgot God and killed his prophets. He drew you back to him time and again, but you loved sin and played the harlot. Then you whined about your pain, would not refrain, refused to repent, and mourned for your sins. When Jesus came, you were so cruel, called him a fool. You spat in his face and crucified him. Wrath and woe and
Lamentations. Hey, all right, welcome back to hour number one of the Sane Asylum. Coming up in 90 minutes, the king of Sunday nights, the only one and only Robert Ravold and Incendiary Radio. And you know, just found out from producer Sam that one of the satellite bills is coming due. And RBN literally operates on a shoestring budget because times are tough. And especially if you're a satellite listener, it's pretty cool that RBN pumps out over the big broadbands. Please donate because they got to pay the bill. And if everybody could go into the store, like Wild Pastures is awesome. A lot of the supplements there are top shelf. You know, they got many great products. If you made a bunch of money in crypto, maybe, you know, send a couple $100 RBN's way, or even better, set it up maybe $50 a month to support them so they can level out their cash flow and understand what's coming. But either way, please support republicbroadcasting.org because it's one of the true bastions of truth tellers. You're not going to hear shows like this on too many other independent media platforms because we do tell the truth. And Frederick and then Jeremy, but we'll go to Frederick first. That was Hey Jews to the music of Hey Jude by the Beatles. And you know what I'm noticing in the last 20 years is 20 years ago, you know, David Duke was vilified for being one of the few to publicly name the Jew. Then along a few years later comes Dennis Fetcho and so many others now. And of course, there was always Vanguard and National Vanguard, Daily Stormer and various others, but they were considered fringe. But now, in my opinion, it's making its way into the mainstream, Frederick. And people like that classroom full of adults and children singing Hey Jews and everywhere, you know, 10 years ago, when I would tell people what I've seen, and I've seen this for a long, long time, I would be called an anti-Semite. People would get up and walk out of the room at social gatherings. I was really good at clearing a room. And now they were, I'm hearing more and more, you know, you were right. So maybe we're slowly moving the needle in the right direction when we get enough people ready to stop this enslavement by the synagogue of Satan. Your thoughts, Frederick, and then Jeremy.
I certainly hope so, because I know exactly what you mean. It's just we have been so conditioned, especially we white Southern gentlemen,
right,
that, you know, you can't look at a Jew sideways without it being anti-Semitism and a hate crime. And, you know, it's just how much information does it take to convince people? It's like, well, they hate you with every fiber of their being. They want you dead and gone. Your civilization destroyed and replaced, and they consider it mitzvah. And, you know, before the break, it's interesting that, you know, we were talking about, you know, the climate in rural America and what is the Jewish solution to these people in rural America, white conservative America, that don't want this foolishness. And the answer is they plan to kill us. You know, that is, yep, their solution. And you go back and you research Bill Ahrens and the Weather Underground and all those people. They were just matter of fact that these white Southerners are Amalek, basically. They can never be, you know, subjugated. They're always going to be fighting to, you know, break off their chains of slavery. They're always going to be a threat. So and they can't be converted. So you just have to take their children from them and kill them. And that's part of the Kalergi plan. And it's interesting that under this new administration of Jezebel Everett at Appalachian State University, just to give a barometer here, the same year she was banning Identity Europa as a hate group with the ADL, the SBLC, and the NAACP as her moral compass in doing so, they were having honors classes sponsored by, of course, the Appalachian State University Holocaust Center, you know, paid for by the Schaefer Kike Dykes that invaded here from Florida with, right, their bags of ill-gotten gains. But, you know, in the honors class, they have Mark Breyer come on with his anti-fascist handbook, giving this honors lecture. And the conclusion of that book, the anti-fascist handbook, is good night, white pride, or whiteness is indefensible. Right? So that's considered honors study at Appalachian State University under this Jewish-controlled administration that has basically came into this town and taken over, took over the media, took over the radio stations, and, you know, all of the carpetbaggers moving in and imposing Jewish rule on the county. And COVID was the big litmus test. All the people pushing for masks and mandates and social distancing, et cetera, were all the carpetbaggers coming in here to set up shop. All the locals were saying, this is BS, but I don't want to lose my job. You know, but they had this town, this county locked down unlike all the other counties, we were having to go out of the county, out of the state, to buy groceries, get prescriptions, because we refused to support the draconian measures here. But, you know, to get back to what he was saying, you know, their solution is to kill you, and they consider that mitzvah, and that's a hard thing to tell somebody and have them not completely shut down on you or get angry at you and start saying, oh, you're just an anti-Semite. And it's like, read their books, listen to their learned elders, you know, what they're saying, these college professors that are calling for white genocide openly. And I think people are finally starting to catch on that, wow, these people really do want us gone. So back to you.
Oh, great observations. Jeremy, your thoughts?
It's not just talking about Jewish power now that's taboo, going back to the David Duke days, but it's even pushing back against the child tranny agenda, the critical race theory, which is really just anti-white hatred in the schools. You push back on any of this, and you can be deplatformed, in danger of losing your job in America. In Europe and Canada, even imprisoned and prosecuted in those areas. So it's, you know, speaking of against Jewish power, that was always taboo, but now they've expanded that. And now even to Merrick Garland, you know, talking about parents that talk to their school boards and protest these measures, they're considered white nationalist terrorists. So they're throwing a huge net out. And just back to the original question before the break, how are they going to prod these people in rural America, like in West Kentucky, to get them to agree to going into 15-minute cities and going into all of this, these measures of controls? They'll do it just a little at a time. They'll just implement what you're not allowed to say, and you'll lose your job if you don't say it. And some people will comply. There'll be a lot that do not. But then my question then is, how long will it be till the Bible itself is considered anti-Semitic and hate speech? You can go to John, Gospel of John chapter 19. Jesus stands before Pilate. Pilate seeks to release him, and the Jews cry, no, crucify him. The Jews put pressure on Pilate to crucify Jesus. Simply reading that chapter in some parts of Europe and Canada could get you put, you know, in a court, can get you prosecuted and pay fines and maybe even jail. So the it's no holds barred. The stops are all pulled out. And again, not just talking against Jewish power, but anything that they're implementing, even pushing back against child trannies, can get you deplatformed.
You know, that's a great observation. And the thing is when you get too sucked into this social media nonsense, it's like a fishbowl. And there are many millions of people who have nothing to do with it and who are building their own houses in Idaho and West Virginia, learning to do it. They're off the grid. There's more and more people going that way. So I don't think that, you know, one of the easiest steps to take to neuter this overreach of the Jew parasite is just get off of social media, get off of everything, and make real world connections. And Sam, if you could cue up clip number 8 and start it at 5 seconds in, this is right in line with what we're talking about. The Jew world order is not a conspiracy theory.
Many times before, how seemingly separate, unrelated events, institutions, and ideas are actually all part of the same invisible global government, which seeks to manipulate public opinion through innumerable strategies of social engineering and psychological warfare. This shadow network of people with staggering multi-generational wealth occupying positions of power have, for decades, persistently attacked and debased us. Psychologically, spiritually, socially, and physically. We have volumes of evidence proving beyond doubt that such an alliance exists, and we know who is behind it. We know the methods they use and have used for decades, if not centuries, and we have them in their own words, telling us their plans for us. The societal diseases we can currently diagnose have been in manufactured metastasis for years. In medicine, the study of iatrogenesis refers to the adverse effects caused not by illness, but by the interventions employed in the treatment of illness. None of this is accidental. What we are witnessing is the end result of the iatrogenic death of Western civilization. It is no wonder that in such a reality, we often see the social and cultural landscape altered suddenly, dramatically, and far from being the organic groundswell it may seem to be, what we are really experiencing is carefully crafted conditioning by the cadre of international capital. In 1947, these forces set forth several organizations and institutions for the purposes of mass opinion engineering. It was in this one year alone when the Kinsey Institute was founded in April, and the CIA and the Tavistock Institute were founded within 2 days of each other in September. All three organizations were covered in Rothschild and Rockefeller fingerprints, armed with Bernaysian propaganda weaponized against us, and would proceed for the next 73 years to declare war on Western civilization on countless offensive fronts. Though seemingly separate organizations with seemingly unrelated ideas, they all have one thing in common aside from their origin, of course, and that is, simply stated, mind control. Mass social engineering meant to mold the minds of men to suit their evil intentions.
Okay, Sam, I think that's good enough. You know, fellas, first Frederick, then Jeremy, it's interesting that that's what has changed since 2009, when it was just basically the internet and the mass media. There wasn't really a huge social media. And so in 2009, when the parasites in Big Pharma tried to roll out their latest phony scamdemic, nobody bought. In fact, an aging Mike Wallace even just shredded a representative of the CDC, what's going on. But 10 years later, every normie and every woke buffoon is like, I'm going to wear 10 masks. I'm going to get my booster even before there's a booster. I mean, they're so fear-addled. And that's what I think social media is, the carrier for that fearful mind control. But as I mentioned a few moments earlier, more and more people have had it with the Talmudic parasites and their Jew world order. And how inspiring is it for this young fella, Oliver Anthony, to write a song about the Jew bankers, I forget what it's called, something, the men north of Richmond, or the bankers north of Richmond or something. And this dude's number one on iTunes. He's not having anything to do with a Jew parasite record label, doesn't have a Jew manager, isn't trying to get into the entertainment business. And now he's like literally living the dream, man. There's nothing like a ride where all of a sudden you're toiling for years and years and you're playing to 20 people at a bar and now you're huge. I mean, God bless Oliver Anthony. And to me, that's another example of real people have had enough with this satanic Talmudic nonsense. First Frederick, then Jeremy.
Oh, and yes, tip of the hat to Mr. Oliver Anthony. And the song that really has put him in the top was Rich Men North of Richmond. And but he has three songs right now in the top 10 on iTunes, right?
That's so great.
And it just within just hours, this has happened to him, where he just went from obscure to your records just hit number one, you know. So yeah, it's really great that song is resonating with so many people. And getting to what you were saying in that clip, you know, it's just spot on about this gradualism. It's the, you know, boiling frog syndrome. If you do it gradual enough, then the people that push back, you can play whack-a-goyim on them and slap them down, and you keep doing your method. And when you look at things like the Delphi method developed at Rand Corps, and just, you know, Rules for Radicals by, you know, Saul Alinsky, it's all about this. You know, you put the pressure on. When people push back, you know, you step back until you can eliminate those people or wait for their energy to die out, and then you just get back to work, but you never release your pressure. So it's always that two steps forward, one step back of Marxism.
Right.
And, you know, the other aspect of this is just the you know, Satanism, because this is out of, you know, Zabbatai Zevi and Jake and, you know, Frank's, you know, work on the Illuminati. It's just everything is opposite. So you make the normal abnormal and you make the abnormal normal. And anybody who says, I don't like that, then you tag them as being counter-revolutionary, white supremacist, Nazi, whatever, to try to turn the crowd against them. This is, you know, the whole idea of they have the megaphone and they're sitting there poking, you know, pointing to all the people they want taken out with that lets you and them fight strategy. They have their enemies kill each other, right? And I think people are waking up to just how over the top this, you know, manipulation is, and that it's happening in every white nation on the planet. This isn't just happening in the United States. And this gets into that whole meta system of Zionism, is they are slime mold that has embedded themselves in power through their capital, their ability to make money out of thin air and loan it at usury rates, etc., to control everybody and enslave everybody. And people are waking up to it, but then realizing just how bad the situation is, because the slime mold is heavily embedded in everything. So back to you.
Oh, great, great observations. Jeremy, your thoughts?
What I've noticed in this area when we talk about corralling normal people in the rural areas into the system, a lot of these guys, older Gen Xers, early boomers, they farmed tobacco and they worked at tire factories here in the early aughts. And in the wake of NAFTA and TPP, these tire factories are gone. And so they make their living with chicken barns, chickens and hogs. And that makes them basically subject to Jewish-dominated corporations that call their shots and how they live their life. Because they made great money at their tire factories, and now they're continuing to make great money by farming chickens and hogs. And they want to keep that lifestyle. And in order to keep that lifestyle, these corporations can impose upon them whatever comes down the pipe. So eventually, if they have to put something in their bodies to keep their farms going, a lot of them will probably do so. And this is a strategy that I see in this area as to keeping rural people corralled. And it's not just the owners of the farms. It's a lot of workers, younger workers that work in these chicken farms and hog farms. So that's one thing that I see. And these people aren't really involved in social media per se, but they want to keep that money flowing, and they're willing to do whatever it takes to keep it flowing. And it's very unfortunate, but that's one of the downsides of living in this rural area where I'm at, is that huge Jewish-owned corporations can manipulate these men, these farmers, through producing chickens and hogs, bacon, and getting them to keep the money flow. All right.
Well, can I ask a question? Why don't these in the landowners, why don't they go organic? I mean, there's a tremendous market. Why don't they cut out the Jew parasite and the transnational corporations and sell direct? There's such a demand. I mean, the commercial runs on RBN all the time for wild pastures, and it's excellent stuff. And why don't they just say F you to the Jew and sell direct to people who would give them a fine living way, you know, a fine living to buy really organic poultry and meat?
The answer is debt. They're under such a tremendous amount of debt. You have to go, I mean, if you just buy chicken buildings to produce these chickens, you got to go under, you know, millions of dollars worth of debt. And they have to make those payments, and so they're willing to capitulate to the companies. They're not free to break away from that. They're sort of stuck in that system. And if they don't comply, you know, they, like Purdue, can send an inspector in and shut down your whole operation, and then you can't pay your mortgages, you can't pay your debt, and they'll come and take your farm, your houses, your trucks, your four-wheelers, all that stuff. So there's a huge leverage that these corporations have over these farmers with debt.
Oh, that's tragic, because they're good people and they're enslaved by these Talmudic parasites. And that's really sad. Frederick, your thoughts?
Oh, I know exactly what he's talking about. We had the same thing here in this region, where originally we had Holly Farms chicken, which was one of the first and model mass chicken producing, you know, the modern factory based on the theories of Henry Ford, right? And that was owned by, you know, local people, local banks, and everybody, you know, looked after each other. And then, lo and behold, Tyson came in and force bought out, you know, Holly Farms chicken, fired all, you know, the local management, you know, and now basically started flooding the area with Mexican workers and giving the farmers here, you know, all of these draconian contracts to sign, that you've got to do this and you've got to do this and you've got to do this. And it's like he was saying, you know, they're so leveraged to the bank and the corporations that, you know, Tyson can shut you out for any reason and then you're going to lose everything, right? And it's the game they play, where they're constantly making the white farmers, you know, update their chicken houses and update this and update that. And what they're trying to do is just come in and buy them up corporately, so that there aren't any more private chicken houses. It's all Tyson chicken houses being processed by either robotics or Mexican workers and Mexican processing at the plant, with both kosher and halal, you know, certification, right? Which I still can't believe there is kosher slaughter in Wilkes County, North Kakalaki,
right,
and halal slaughter going on. The most unsanitary thing you could ever imagine. But
yep,
that's okay, right? But, you know, this just the whole dynamic, and it's to destroy the independent farming culture that was here. And basically it's that, you know, removing private farms, removing private businesses from the equation. And you know, these poor farmers, it's like they've got their hand in the monkey trap, you know, the gourd with the fruit in it tied to the tree, and the
right,
monkey won't let go. You know, and that's the thing is, you know, how can we get these farmers to break this corporate cycle? And like you said, start doing small, independent, cooperative food processing plant that's actually making real food rather than toxic goy slop poison, right? So back to you.
So true. I think we have time, Sam, if you could play clip number 10. This is stunning. Every once in a while, one of these parasitic bankers shows that he can toss a scrap of meat known as truth. And this is Federal Reserve Minneapolis Bank President Neil, N-E-E-L, Kashkari, admitting central bank digital currencies are nothing more than an enslavement scam. This is pretty wild.
Central bank digital currency. Do you think that is something that you all should be looking into seriously? To what degree should you be looking into it seriously? Just what are your thoughts on CBDC?
I mean, as my colleagues at the Federal Reserve have talked about, we are examining it. I'll tell you, my personal bias is I'm pretty skeptical. I keep asking anybody at the Fed or outside of the Fed to explain to me what problem this is solving. I can send anybody in this room $5 with Venmo right now. Right? No, seriously. So what is it that a CBDC could do that Venmo can't do? And all I get is a bunch of hand waving. I get a bunch, well, maybe it's better for financial inclusion. Maybe it's better for cross-border remittances. Maybe. Is there any evidence that it is? And, you know, they say, well, what about China? China's doing it. Well, I can see why China would do it. If they want to monitor every one of your transactions, you could do that with the central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. If you want to impose negative interest rates, you could do that with the central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. And if you want to directly tax customer accounts, you could do that with the central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. So I get why China
All right.
would be interested.
That is a
Why
great
would the American
quote.
People be?
It's hats off to Neil Kashkari for telling the obvious truth that these Talmudic parasites are trying to enslave us digitally. Stay tuned for hour number 2. We're going to open up the phone lines with Frederick C. Blackburn and Jeremy from Kentucky. It's a great show with two great guests. Stay tuned.
handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today because you can handle the truth.